Today's show is sponsored by Talkspace, the online therapy company. For a fraction of the price of traditional therapy, you can pick an experienced, licensed therapist you relate to and feel comfortable with. Each and every therapist has at least a master's degree and has completed over 3,000 hours of supervised work. To match with your perfect therapist, go to Talkspace.com/boom. And to show your support for this podcast, use code BOOM to get $30 off your first month. That's BOOM. Talkspace.com/boom. B-O-O-M.
You're listening to the Locked On Nuggets podcast, your daily podcast on the Denver Nuggets. Now, here is your host from DenverStiffs.com, Adam Mades.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to Locked On Nuggets podcast, part of Locked On NBA Network. I'm your host, Adam Mades from DenverStiffs.com, the largest Denver Nuggets blog and community on the web. Check us out. You want to check us out because we have some really cool stuff that went up on the site over the last 2-3 days or so, including an article I just wrote on Nikola Jokic's different types of passing. I really enjoyed that one. I've got 10 minutes worth of Jokic highlights sprinkled in throughout the article and kind of made an encyclopedia of all the different types of passes Jokic makes. Got really good feedback, and it was also just a lot of fun. So probably the most fun thing I've written on Stiffs for a while. This episode is brought to you by SeatGeek. It's the smartest, easiest way to find tickets for the game you want to see up close in person this season. There's nothing like being at the game for the biggest plays of the year. And with SeatGeek, it's never been easier to get the seats you want for great value. SeatGeek has the best deals on every ticket in the house, wherever you want to sit, whether it's courtside, club seats, or upper level. With SeatGeek, you always get the best deal on every ticket because SeatGeek price compares for you across multiple ticket sites. Prices can vary depending on where you shop, but not with SeatGeek, which always finds the lowest available price. And SeatGeek wants to help you get the most bang for your buck. That's why every ticket on SeatGeek is given a grade based on value. You'll immediately see any underpriced seats and be able to find the best deals that fit your budget. Plus, every ticket you buy on SeatGeek is backed by their 100% guarantee. Best of all, listeners of this show get a $20 rebate off their first SeatGeek purchase. Somebody hit me up on Twitter the other day asking what the promo code was, so I'm glad to see people are using it. Promo code is LO Nuggets. Here's what you do. You download the app, the SeatGeek app. It's free. You go to the settings tab, click add a promo code, and you type in LO Nuggets. LO like locked on. LO Nuggets. You get $20 off. Well, actually, $20 back after you've made your first purchase. So check that out and be sure to use that promo code, guys. It supports the show, and also it gives you that great discount. This episode of the podcast is going to be on small forwards in free agency. And I think it's kind of an interesting one because let me set it up by saying this. I've said all year, really since like January, that I don't think Danilo Gallinari is coming back. I don't have any inside information or anything like that. I'm purely speculating here, but it doesn't really make sense in my mind for him to come back, and it doesn't make sense for the Nuggets. The timing of it, I don't think, makes sense for the Nuggets to offer him a big contract. First of all, he's been hurt. He's dealt with injuries. He's 29 years old, I believe, and you know, he's going to get a 4-year deal wherever he goes here. This is going to be kind of his last big deal. And, you know, 32, 33-year-old Gallo making the type of money he's going to command on the open market, I just don't think that really fits the Nuggets timeline. So he's 28, almost 29. I just don't think it fits the timeline. It's not horrible fit. If the Nuggets were to re-sign him and you know, maybe even got him right at market value or a little bit below, I don't think that's a terrible deal for the Nuggets, but I also don't think it's the best deal, and the effects of that signing would really be felt 2, 3, 4 years from now, I think. But he is a terrific player, and I am of the opinion that losing Danilo Gallinari, he'd be very, very hard to replace. That's one of the themes of this episode, or of what I'm going to be talking about today, because there is a chance that the Nuggets take a step back next year, and I know nobody wants that to happen. No Nuggets fan, I know the ownership, front office, nobody wants that to happen, but I just think replacing Gallo is really tough, and then that's compounded by the fact that there's a decent chance, again, this is outside information, this isn't, you know, I'm talking to people or sources are telling me, but we know that Wilson Chandler had been unhappy with his role and pretty vocal about some of his discontent, including voicing some discontent after the season was over. There was something, you know, Wilson tweeted out something about I was never given a role or something like that. on Twitter kind of showing that he is still unhappy with how things played out. Now, he has been at the gym. I've seen him a couple times now, working out and doing different things with the training staff. And, you know, so it's not like he's completely given the cold shoulder. Who knows what the relationship is or what his perspective is with the Nuggets. But my guess is that he probably wants out. He did hire a new agent, and that could have been for a million different reasons, but it's also possible that he hired an agent because he wants somebody that's going to force his way out of Denver and get him into a favorable situation. It also could mean, you know, he's got one more year left on his deal. He's got a very big, his last big contract, just like Gallo, he's got kind of his last really big chance to make a lot of money, and you don't want to blow that. This will be when he really gets to kind of set himself up for the rest of his life financially. So a lot of things could be going into it. But I am under the assumption that the Nuggets will that there's a very good chance the Nuggets will not have either Gallo or Wilson. And both of those guys really unlocked the Nuggets' versatility this year and opened up a lot of what made them work on the offensive end. They both were, you know, our flawed players and you know, maybe it's time for them to move on. Maybe it's time for the team to move on, but replacing them is going to be tough. So this episode, we're looking at free agents that can fill the small forward position. Not necessarily small forward free agents, but people that can play there. And it is important to note that two rookies this season could potentially step into that spot. The first is Juancho Hernangómez, who I absolutely love. 40% three-point shooter this year, incredibly hard worker, great attitude. I love his skill set. I think he's a high IQ, unselfish player with incredible motor, and he's too thin. He's not great defensively. He has to add a lot of skills like ball handling and you know, a lot to his game. I don't know if he's going to shoot 40% next year like he did this year, although he works his butt off with his shot, so maybe. I don't know if he's ready to step in. You can't say, oh, Juancho will fill Gallo and Wilson's role, or Juancho can, you know, we'll just replace Gallo with Juancho and we'll be fine. I don't think that's true. The Nuggets did play some of their best basketball this season when Gallinari was out, including the win over the Warriors, where Juancho was just absolutely on fire. But I think Juancho would have games like that because he's so unselfish and the ball plays through Jokic when Juancho is on the floor a lot more than it did with Gallo. But, you know, what happened in that game was Juancho was on fire. And, of course, any time a player is on fire, they're going to look incredible. So that being said, I'm very high on Juancho 2, 3, 4 years from now. I think next year I'd love to see him getting 15, 20 minutes a game, every game is kind of the backup power, small forward and power forward. But I don't know that he can be a guy that you rely on for more than a bench role next year. Maybe I'm wrong. You know, I'm a big fan of it, and I'd love to be proven wrong about that. But I still think he's like Gary Harris 2 years ago. Gary Harris this year was a phenomenal starting shooting guard 2 years ago. You know, he kind of grew into that role a little bit. So Juancho might be there. The other one is Malik Beasley. And Beasley, Juancho is a small forward / power forward. Beasley, I think, is a shooting guard who could slide over to play small forward. Both of those guys, I think, later on in their careers can play down a spot a lot more. But right now, they're just physically, I don't think, capable. Juancho guarded LeBron James, another small forward who just bullied the heck out of him. And obviously LeBron's a tough cover and he bullies a lot of people, but it wasn't just LeBron's skill that was bullying Juancho. It was his size that kind of just pushed him out and one, 3 plays in a row. And I think, you know, Juancho's probably another year away before he can handle that level of athlete, Carmelo Anthony's and guys like that. So for both of those guys, I like them, but I just think their development will be a little bit slow. Juancho especially, I think I'd love to see him in a bench role. So let's start with the scrubs. These are the guys I don't want on the Nuggets. But, you know, there's a real chance the Nuggets they probably won't get their first pick of free agent. I don't know if the small forward position is their number one target. I'm guessing they're going to go after – there's point guards and there are power forwards that I think they will look at. Shooting guards and centers, I think they're pretty much know what they have, and I don't know that they're going to look to add anybody. But power forwards, small forwards, point guards, those are the spots that I think the Nuggets are probably going to look at in free agency and through trades. So here are the guys I don't like. CJ Miles, you know, scorer. consistent, relatively consistent role playing, like kind of one-on-one scorer and shooter. He's got some good things in his game, like he can shoot the ball. But he's a terrible defender. The Nuggets don't need another negative defender unless he's going to be an absolute stud on the offensive end. 41% three-point shooter this season was a career high. 36% is his career average. You know, 11 point per game score. Nice complimentary guy. He would be an okay bench guy. He would have been an okay bench guy like this year, for example. But I don't think going forward he's a guy you want on any kind of deal. That would be a huge step back from Gallo. Bojan Bogdanović, one of my favorite players to watch. But also, same thing, a scorer. I think he would fit really on the offensive end. He would be pretty good. But defensively, he is just absolutely horrible. And I just don't think the Nuggets would almost guaranteed to be the worst defensive team in the league if they were relying on him. And he's not a starting caliber. Neither of those two guys, in my opinion, are starting caliber small forwards. Jeff Green, another guy I don't love. His teams are always, he's like the plus minus, punching bag, right? His teams are always better whenever he comes off of the floor, and you have to wonder why that is. He does have a unique skill set in that he can knock down some outside shots. He knows how to cut. But like I said, I think he's one of those fool's gold type players that would look a lot better in a pro-am game than he does in an actual NBA game. And then the three-point percentage is just not that great either, 27%. This last season, 33 career, that's just not getting it done. He's like a worse version of Wilson Chandler. So Wilson Chandler is a great backup, you know, six-man scorer like this. I think Jeff Green is a worse version of that. Dante Cunningham, really don't care for his game too much. He's got the length. I think he's 6'8". But again, another guy that's just like, he doesn't really move the needle. And when you're talking about what would the Nuggets invest in him? Career 32% three-point shooter, although he did shoot a little bit better this season, 39%. I believe that's a career high. It is. But again, doesn't move the needle. And what kind of offer are you making to a player like that? Thabo Sefolosha was really good three years ago when that Hawks team was really good. Maybe more of a result of the system. Could be a lockdown defender. Shot is incredibly inconsistent. And, you know, he's a system player, another guy that I think could be a good stopgap for like a year or something, but he's not moving the needle, and that's a huge step down. And lastly, Luke Mbah-Mute, defensive stud, really good defender, kind of plays more of like the power forward and small ball lineups type of guy, but he could play the three and the four for Denver. Defensive ace, shooter, shooting okay, doesn't make a ton of money, so another guy that maybe would be a kind of a cheap buy. But those are all guys that you get, I think, kind of a bottom of the barrel. I'll add two more guys to that list that I don't think are very realistic. I don't think the Nuggets are looking at these guys. Michael Beasley is one, had the best year of his career this season. You know, traditionally he's been kind of the immature, low basketball IQ type player, but very, very skilled individually. This year he had kind of a surprisingly good year this year that was very un-Michael Beasley-esque, you know, kind of efficient and played within himself. It was kind of funny. 42% three-point shooter this year, despite being a career 35% three-point shooter. It's kind of tempting because he's the guy that has been so bad and such a problem, and then all of a sudden he has this one really, really good year. Now he's a free agent. You sign him, and he ends up going back to the old Michael Beasley. So he's another one that's, you know, maybe you can get low, but my guess is that he's probably more risk than he's worth, and then you never know what he would do, you know, coming to Denver, if he would become unhappy or a distraction. Omri Caspery is another one. Struggled with injuries a lot this year as well as being traded, and then got injured again immediately. He's another guy I kind of like. Omri Caspery's game, I think he's underrated. International, almost certainly plug in and be good with the team. But again, that's a huge step down from Gallo. I don't think Caspery's not a starter. He's probably more of like your 10 to 15 minutes per game backup role player, situational type guy. All right, so those are the throwaways. Let's get on to intriguing. I labeled this one intriguing, but not too intriguing. I labeled these groups. I don't know why I labeled them the way I did. Jonathan Simmons, who I kind of like. He's a shooting guard, small forward kind of combo. Can play some defense. Just comes from the Spurs system. The Spurs kind of he hasn't made that much money in his career, and I think I don't think he's gonna break the bank or anything like that this summer. But he's 27 years old, almost 28, so he's like a year younger than Gallo. 2 years in the NBA, was kind of a role player for the Spurs. Can shoot the three a little bit, but not that great, but provides some defense and some size. He's intriguing, but again, the reason I label this as intriguing but not too intriguing, because he's a guy that if the Nuggets got him, if the Nuggets got stuck with him, meaning like they lost Wilson and Gallo, but then they ended up signing Simmons, it wouldn't be like the end of the world, but it's a huge step back for sure, and I'm guessing that the price tag wouldn't be too high. Moving on up, this is my favorite group. It's the old guys. This is not going to happen, first of all. None of these guys are realistic, but it is kind of funny to look at some of these old guys that maybe would provide 1 year. If the Nuggets don't find a guy that they like as kind of the long-term piece and you need to plug in a guy for a year, here are some of the names I kind of enjoyed. I'm going to start with the craziest one, and that's Manu Ginobili. Lifelong Spur, and I thought it was funny watching, you know, his good farewell, because and he even commented on this after the game. He never said he was retiring. He's never made that official or even hinted at it. And it kind of felt like the Spurs were wanting him to retire. And I'm going to tell this story just because it's funny and it goes off. But my wedding day, I got, had a great time. Really, really enjoyed my wedding and drinks and dancing and everything else. And, you know, of course, my wife and I were both tipsy, and we go down to get our bags because we think we're getting, you know, someone's going to drive us to our hotel. And then the next day we had a flight to Mexico. So we're getting ready to gather our stuff and come up. And everybody, as we come back up from the basement, everybody had made this tunnel as this like send off, this like farewell. And it was gorgeous. They made this like this tunnel for us to walk out. But of course we were too drunk to drive, and everybody was like, goodbye, like all the way to our car, like get in the car, goodbye. And my wife and I, we sat in there like, we're not driving away. We're too drunk to drive. So we sat there for 30 minutes because we were like, that send-off was so beautiful. We can't waste it. But at the same time, we can't drive to our hotel. Well, this reminded me of Manu, where like he gets the standing ovation and everything's all emotional. And he's kind of like, guys, I'm coming back. I don't want to retire yet. I still want to play basketball. So if the Spurs, and you know, there's talk about the Spurs wanting to try to get Chris Paul and add him to the roster, and they'll have to cut some salaries. You know, it might be a thing where the Spurs might not actually want Manu back. And if Manu doesn't want to retire, as much as it's a storybook ending to go out with the one team and play for one team your whole career, he could end up making some money here in Denver, being sort of a mentor and being somewhere in between. Manu's still a good player in spots. His problem is I don't think he can play 82 games and he can't play starters minutes, but he is still incredibly talented. I think playing with a guy like Nikola Jokic, he's on the same wavelength. He's so smart. He can pass, he can shoot, and, you know, if he's playing 50 games for one season and he's playing, you know, 10 to 15 minutes a night, but every now and then he's closing games for you, he could be an intriguing one. So I put him on the list. Kyle Korver is another one who's a free agent, shooting just the lights out, just one of the best shooters ever. It's funny because the thing about jump shooters has been that, you know, over time, maybe their legs kind of leave them and they fall off a cliff. But we're seeing all these shooters that late into their career now continue to have value, in part because when you have a nice offensive system and some creators, your shooters can kind of be the guys that stand in the corner. Korver's as good as they come as a shooter. He would shoot 45% from three next year playing alongside Jokic. He would really open the paint up, and he's just so good off ball, so good catching and shooting quickly. He'd be a lot of fun to watch with Jokic. Of course, he's not a very good defender. In fact, he's a terrible defender, and so that would be a big problem. Also, I think he has a home in Cleveland, and if Cleveland wins it this year, even if they don't, you know, he might be just inclined to come back there and kind of take on the same role that he's had, which is not too many minutes a night, but a kind of an important role with certain lineups. Vince Carter's another one. Again, this is the least favorite of the old guys, but, you know, still playing well. He's still a great cutter. He's a guy that actually might pair well with Nikola Jokic on the offensive end because he's such a good cutter. He's still athletic. He can shoot the three, and he can't really ISO anymore late games or anything like that, but he can be a big shot taker and another just veteran presence. But, you know, again, these are guys that you're probably signing for 1 year if everything falls through. And this is my favorite one, Dwayne Wade. Obviously, the Nuggets pursued him in free agency last year, and I was glad that they did not. In fact, I think had Wade been here, Gary Harris would not have had the breakout season that he did, and it would have been a disaster. But now Gary Harris has established himself. Dwayne Wade, a shooting guard, but tall enough maybe to play the small forward position for the Nuggets and kind of start at small forward and then bump to shooting guard. And, you know, the Nuggets would certainly be playing small, but for 1 year. Now, Dwayne Wade has, I think, $25 million coming to him if he decides to take his player option. I don't think the Nuggets would give him $25 million on the open market for a single season. They'd probably do like a 1+1 if he opted out or something like that. But there are some scenarios where the Nuggets could trade potentially for him, knowing, you know, that it's just kind of a one-year thing. Or they can try to make a more favorable, longer-term deal. I wouldn't love a longer-term deal, but Dwayne Wade, as much as he did not have a great year this year, and as much as he's had problems with injuries, and he might just plain be over the hill, I actually think he's a good fit. He's like, Dwayne Wade is kind of, at this stage of his career, is kind of like Gary Harris, without the three-point shot, of course, but he is just a phenomenal shooter, or cutter. Great instincts on when to cut and how to get open off ball. And, of course, guys like that are just phenomenal with Jokic. If the Nuggets started next year, Jamal Murray, Gary Harris, and Dwayne Wade, you're talking about three guys that are phenomenal cutters, two of which are great shooters, and then Dwayne Wade, at this stage, not necessarily a consistent defender, but we know that he can be a great defender for moments. And then on top of that, I do think he is a veteran, and the Nuggets, as young as they are, they still need those types of veterans, guys that can kind of show them the way. And lastly, you talk about free agents. You know, Mike Miller has been a recruiter and kind of a Nuggets champion over the last couple seasons. Dwayne Wade and Mike Miller together, both, you know, having favorable experiences here in Denver, I think would go well down the line for other free agents. So, Dwayne Wade, that list I call the old guys. I know not everybody's going to love all of the names. Maybe they don't love any of the names on that one, but it is a possibility for very short-term fixes. One of the things I like about that is you're not making long-term commitments to any of those guys. And so if they don't work out, okay, it's a season, maybe two, but that's a lot better than signing a four-year deal to somebody you really don't – you're not in love with. The next one is the flawed good guys. Andre Roberson, I could have called this the Andre Roberson list because Andre Roberson, just one of the best perimeter defenders in the NBA. The Nuggets need his type of defense to kind of contain and shut down some of the bigger players in the league, and he would absolutely bring that and improve the Nuggets defense single-handedly. Problem is, he is such a liability on the offensive end that I don't even think the Jokic, I don't think you can plug him in to this offense. It would certainly take the Nuggets offense down a peg. And I really think that most players are going to thrive with Jokic. I don't think you have to have like 3-and-D type players in that role. I think you can have a pretty good shooter and, you know, a smart off-ball player, and that's, you don't have to have a superstar or anything like that. But Andre Roberson is going to test that theory because his shot is so inconsistent. It's so consistently bad that I think it would kind of kill the spacing a little bit. And he's also a guy that's about to get paid, I believe. So you're talking about a long-term deal. He's a good player, and if the Nuggets got him, I certainly wouldn't throw a fit, but I would be very concerned that there's a bust factor to a signing like that. P.J. Tucker is the other one. I'm a P.J. Tucker fan. He plays such hard defense, and he shoots the ball. He's a good locker room guy by all accounts, and tough as nails. He'd bring a lot of toughness. I just don't think he's very good at the end of the day. Like, he might be really good with the Nuggets. He might actually look like a world beater, but he seems like the classic guy that does all the right things but doesn't actually have the impact you would think. And then, of course, a playoff series, he just got – you bring a guy in like that so he can guard some of the best players, but he's no different than anybody else guarding LeBron. LeBron, it's not that he's not as good of a defender as, like, your average small forward. It's just that he doesn't really move the needle on some of your upper – you know, the Kevin Durants and of the world and players like that. Now we're moving on to the great gets. These guys are all guys that I love and would be super thrilled, but at the same time are probably unrealistic. In fact, every guy on the list from here on out is probably unrealistic. First off is Tony Snell, who I actually really love. He's a restricted free agent. Bounced around. I mean, he was in Chicago, and I actually liked him in Chicago. One of the reasons I liked him is one of the first years he was in the league, actually one of the first years I was covering it, so this would have been his sophomore year. I saw him up close and in person, I think at one of the games I was covering for the Nuggets, and the guy's build is so unique. He's got such long arms and wide shoulders. Like, his shoulders just are really coat hanger shoulders, and I think that translates – I think that plays into why he's such a good defender. He's got these long arms and this wide wingspan that really make him kind of a tricky player to read when you're an offensive player. And then this year, 40% – I mean, he was not a good three-point shooter coming in. Every year he's kind of improved, and this year 40% from three – I have the confidence that he would be a 40% three-point shooter in Denver. He took 4.5 a game, which is kind of surprising. He would be an absolutely perfect fit. The problem is, I don't think Milwaukee is going to let him go. Good players, spoiler alert, good players, you know, teams tend to try to hold on to him. 6'7", he plays the shooting guard and the small forward position, but I think he would be a small forward here in Denver. He would provide that defense while maintaining the spacing and pretty good cutter as well. And he's young. I think he's like 25. Let me see. Yeah, he's 25 years old. So he would kind of fit the timeline of his peak would come right as Jokic and Murray and Harris are all kind of starting to hit their strides. The next one is James Johnson. This was one of my favorite players to watch all year this year. He's really more of a power forward to me. He's a small ball power forward who can even play some center. Defensive ace. For the Nuggets, he would probably play both the three and the four. One of the things I like about him is you could play him and Wancho together, and then depending on the matchup, you know, put Wancho on the weaker offensive player and James Johnson on the stronger defender. He is physically strong. He has like the strength to play the small ball four or five. A lot of times you have like a guy that's long but kind of can get bullied. James Johnson's a super strong guy. Phenomenal passer. I think the Nuggets would become they're already one of the best passing teams, but they would probably vault up into one of the two, three best passing teams. I don't know if you're going to become a better passing team than the Warriors, but he would certainly add to it. And then he's a reliable three-point shooter, kind of like Wilson Chandler. Not a great three-point shooter, but he's reliable enough, and he goes through ups and downs that when he's on fire, he's the kind of guy that can hit three, four, five in a row. So I like James Johnson a lot. One of the raps on him is that I've heard, you know, he's been a locker room problem. He's had some legal issues in the past, although from all accounts in Miami, he has been a model citizen and great teammate. I think he loves Miami and has found a home there, so my guess is that he probably will return there. I think he's an underrated player. Just incredibly underrated. He did slim down this year, and that was a big part of why he was so good. But he plays the style of basketball that I think is so valuable, and that is this great playmaker, passer, smart, usually plays within himself. My biggest question with James Johnson would be, how does he fit with Jokic? Because he plays similar to Jokic. He's a passing big, kind of a playmaking big. Jokic is obviously a center, and James Johnson more of a 3/4. But I think kind of using him as the screener and pick and roll and then giving him the ball in the roll to make a play, that's obviously what Jokic is best at. So it'd be interesting to see what the dynamic is there, but I actually think they would fit pretty well overall. The last of the great gets, Otto Porter, who I love. Really, really good player. He's not in my highest tier player, and here's why. He's not a star. He's not a superstar type player. He's a super role player. And those guys, you know, you need those types of players. He made a huge leap this season, and I think that's also always concerning. He's playing with one of the best point guards in the NBA, especially one of the best point guards for increasing your three-point shot in John Wall. But he shot 43% from three this year. That's by far, that's 8% higher than his previous best, which was last year. Now it's improved every year. 19%, 34%, 37%, 43%. So it's gone up every year. But is he a 40% three-point shooter, or is he 36% three-point shooter like he was for the previous three seasons? That's an important question to ask. Plenty of guys have had one hot year, right, especially in contract years, and then never lived up to that expectation. But I think Otto Porter's a great player. He does his job defensively. He's a smart cutter. He stays out of the lane, and just fills his role. I think he'd be another guy that you plug in and he just kind of fits right in. So he'd be a great get. The problem with all of these guys is I don't know that they're gettable. James Johnson may be the most gettable, but he had such a good year, every team's going to be after him. Tony Snell is probably going to get matched in restricted free agency unless you overpay for him. And Otto Porter, same thing. You might actually not be able to pry him away for any price, but for most of the prices, I think that Washington is probably going to match whatever is thrown their way. So I think all three of those guys would be great gets, and if there's a deal to be made, that would be phenomenal. I just don't think it's going to happen. So now let's move on to the dream guys. There's three guys here. First is Robert Covington. Absolutely love Robert Covington. I think he's in the – yeah, he is. He's a restricted free agent. So one of the best perimeter defenders in the entire NBA. Not a lot of people watch the 76ers, especially I've found, you know, Nuggets fans and people that listen to the show. But Covington, phenomenal player. Just think almost Kawhi Leonard-esque defensive lockdown ability. He shuts down whoever. He's 6'8", I believe, 6'9", 6'9", 215, 220. Just perfect build and super mobile. Plays within himself, but he's the type of guy that he will guard LeBron James. He will guard Kevin Durant, and he will do a very good job on him. He will make their lives difficult. Offensively, 33% three-point shooter, 35 career, but 33 this year. I actually think he could become a 35, 36% three-point shooter. Again, roughly like Wilson Chandler, maybe slightly better as far as just catch-and-shoot shooting. But the thing I like about him is, again, he cuts very well and plays within himself. I think the defensive impact he brings is good, and the offensive impact that he brings is good enough that he would look better than he actually is next to Jokic, and young enough as well that he would be a guy. You know, the 76ers are obviously, 76ers fans love this dude. 26 years old, they want him to be a part of the core there in Philadelphia, but, you know, they've got a lot of guys that are going to be in the core. Somebody's going to get left out. I think they would probably match offers on him, but he's a guy that I absolutely love the fit, and he, that's why he's in my dream section here with two other guys. Number two, everybody knows it. It's no mystery. It's Joe Ingles, my favorite guy. This guy actually, it's funny that he's in the dream situation, right? And here's why. Me and my friend and colleague Jeff Morton, we disagree about this one as passionately as you possibly can, because he really doesn't – he sees Joe Ingles as a role player, which he is. He's kind of a super role player. He's certainly not a star. But he's as good – in my opinion, he is the most ideal type of role player. Great on-ball defender, great team defender. The guy – I don't know if I've ever seen him lose focus on the defensive end. You watch players and like, oh, they got a backdoor cut, or they were a step late on the pick and roll because they were watching, you know, they lost focus or whatever. Joe Ingles is always so insanely focused on that end that his footwork and timing and everything is so perfect. He does obviously have physical limitations, but the fact that he became such a plus defender despite being as athletic as Mike Miller, it really tells you how this guy's focus and attention to detail, just how great he is. And then one of the best three-point shooters in the entire NBA. If he is open, I just trust that he is going to knock down the shot. And alongside Jokic, he's going to always be open. Let's see, 44% from three this year. Now, just imagine for a second you had Jamal Murray, Gary Harris, and Joe Ingles on the three-point line. Now, Gary Harris shot 40-something percent this year, I think right around 44. Gary Harris, Joe Ingles, and then Jamal Murray, who my prediction is next year Jamal Murray is going to shoot like 38% or better from three, especially on catch-and-shoot opportunities. So if you had three guys that shot that efficient from three, and by the way, all three of them are phenomenal cutters – I just think that's a recipe for the best offensive rating in the entire NBA, competing with the Warriors, at least, for the best offensive rating. And not just the best offensive rating, but getting to 110, 120 points per game easily, meaning it's not that, oh, so-and-so got hot tonight and had 40 points and was doing all these crazy stuff. It's just you run your offense and you have these guys in there and you find layups and threes. And Joe Ingles, on top of that, plays point guard late in games. I think one of my worries about Jamal Murray next season, you know, if they bring back Moody, Jameer, and Jamal Murray, which I don't think all three guys would come back. But if you bring those guys back, Jamal Murray, you want to close games, but his point guard skills are still being developed. Maybe they develop in one summer. I don't know. I would probably bet against it pretty heavily. But Joe Ingles is the kind of guy you could bring in as the point guard late in games and run Murray off ball, run Harris off ball, and Joe Ingles guards threes but plays the one on offense and initiates the offense. The Clippers actually had him do this. The Jazz actually had him do this. Even sometimes with George Hill on the floor, they would just kind of let him bring the ball up court and initiate the offense. I think Joe Ingles is just not just a good player, he's a fantastic player and the perfect type of player for what the Nuggets are doing here in Denver. I think a team of Jamal Murray, Gary Harris, Joe Ingles, Kenneth Reed, and Nikola Jokic is a playoff team. And obviously we'd need some depth and some reinforcement in certain places, but I think that's the type of guy that he's not as good as Danilo Gallinari in a vacuum, not as good as Wilson Chandler in a vacuum, but he actually brings these skills to the table that would make the Nuggets as good or at least maintain how good they are. And then on top of that, he's going to cost less than some guys like Otto Porter, for example, who actually I think is going to get paid like a star despite being more of a super role player. Lastly, the dream guys, Gordon Hayward, same team as Joe Ingles. Gordon Hayward is so good. I think if he was in LA or New York or something like this, he would be all-star every single year and getting so much more hype. The guy's just phenomenal. No chance of coming to Denver, of course. He's probably going to stay in Utah or possibly go to Boston or one of these other cities, maybe Miami. Denver, I don't know what they can offer him that other teams can't. If his free agency was next year and not this year, and we had one more year of development from Murray and Jokic and Harris, maybe Gordon Hayward would see the writing on the wall and jump ship. But why would he leave Utah for Denver when Utah is basically a year ahead of Denver? I mean, you can't realistically say that the Nuggets will be better than Utah next year if Utah brings back everybody. You know, fans in Denver might think that, but Gordon Hayward wouldn't think that. And certainly wouldn't think that the organization has sort of the can't-miss factor that teams like Miami and Boston have. Boston just has that reputation, and Miami obviously has that reputation as well with all the championships and some of the stability they've had for a decade now. So that's my list. Those are the dream guys. I think when you look at the dream guys, the great gets, I think they're just unrealistic. I don't see the Nuggets being able to pursue any of those guys. And I don't know how much time the Nuggets are going to spend or if those guys are even on the roster. I suspect that they're going to look more at power forwards like Paul Millsap, maybe some point guards, and then look for trades in the draft and also just not through free agents. And that leaves guys that make me much less excited, Andre Robertson's, PJ Tucker's, and the like. And then you're starting to get into guys that, to me, it just doesn't move the needle, and I think the Nuggets take a step back. But if there is some way to land one of those six guys I just mentioned at the top, that would be phenomenal. Thanks so much for listening, guys. We'll be back later on with an episode. We're going to talk about power forwards in free agency. Thanks for tuning in. Be sure to subscribe on iTunes and leave a review if you haven't already.
Napa know-how. It takes a lot to get excited about a bag, but most bags can't save you 20% on auto parts. That's 20% off headlamps, 20% off oil filters, 20% off virtually anything you can fit inside the 99-cent Napa reusable bag. So tell your buddies, there's a bag they just have to check out. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa know-how. Napa know-how. At participating Napa Auto Parts stores while supplies last. Minimum three items. Exclusions apply. Offer ends 10/31/17.